pull up, get it. Live. Yeah. What's up? This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though. Right
here. A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else. Yeah. It's the Dolewhite Podcast.
Another episode of the Dolewhite Podcast. My guest today, Norman Solomon, author of the new book, War Made Invisible. Welcome in.
Hey, thanks a lot.
So just a little background on me. My father was a Vietnam veteran and got a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star. And to this day, if you ask me what the Vietnam War was about, I probably couldn't tell you. I know we were fighting communism at the time. But I don't think many Americans really ask, like, what does that really mean? Why were we really over there? And I think if you ask that question to a lot of people about any wars throughout our lifetime, a lot of those answers are going to be, yeah, well, we were fighting this. Well, why were we fighting for that? And again, a lot of those answers are going to be unclear, kind of in the neighborhood of what your book is about a little bit here, kind of what the toll of the nonstop war machine that has been America over the past several decades has become, correct?
Yes, it is nonstop. You know, even during the Vietnam War, which we know now from the Pentagon Papers and other sources was based on lies, people asked, and I'm old enough to remember, I wonder when this war is going to end. People don't ask that anymore about the so-called war on terror. It is a 24/7, 365, one decade after another. And it's like the saying of the fish in the water, what water after a while? There are people born in this century who are adults now who have never known anything other than at least vaguely the U.S. is at war. So it's good for the Pentagon contractors. It's bad for most everybody else.
Including the people that we send over there, right? Like I have relatives, cousins in the military, and you get sold, especially in rural America. My father's from rural America, and I remember growing up and going to their local spots. I grew up in Atlanta, so I'm not, I can't claim rural America, but I'm familiar with small towns in America, and you know, going into military service from those places there's a high amount of people, and they sell it to you your entire life. Like if you don't want to go to college, you go to the military. If you don't want to stay in this town, you go to the military. I think individually for the kids that do sign up, that's a noble thing to do. However, the people that make the decisions to send these kids to fight aren't always making the best decisions for the kids themselves, correct?
This is something that's been called an economic draft. What kind of country tells people if you want an education and you're not affluent, you should go in the military? Right. I mean, that is just fundamentally unfair. One of the things I discovered when I was researching this book was when I read the speeches in Vietnam, when Lyndon Johnson as president went and spoke to the troops, and then Barack Obama went to Afghanistan and spoke to the troops, it was almost the same. Yeah. They used the same rhetoric. They flattered people. They said, you're so noble. We love you. Everybody at home loves you. But there's really no mention of the fact that every single soldier, every service man and woman in that crowd, thousands of them assembled before the president, not one of them had anything to say about going to war in the first place. So they're used as props. I'm all for praising troops. And when they get home, they should get excellent health care like everybody else should. But that doesn't mean that presidents should just be moving them around on the chessboard like toy soldiers. That's the way it's worked out.
And there's a huge death toll also that we don't see on the other side of things, the countries that we do stick around and fight in. And not just their soldiers either in the heat of battle, right? I mean, kids that have nothing to do with any of these beefs between governments or beefs between whoever are also dying. And they don't show that here, do they? We don't see that. You're not going to turn on the TV and see an Iraqi kid dying at the hands of our military. You just won't see
that. Part of the really deadly invisibility of U.S. wars, where we have U.S. firepower that is tremendously powerful, the strongest military in the world. There's a drone whistleblower from the U.S. Air Force serving a 45-month sentence in Marion, Ohio, Daniel Hale, who leaked documents to the press showing that up to 90% of the victims of U.S. drone attacks were civilians. Well, what kind of military operation is that? And to make it worse, not only U.S. government covering that up, but very rarely in the routine coverage or the unroutine coverage have U.S. news media actually portrayed that to us. You know, quite properly, U.S. soldiers and their families are presented as real human beings. The Ukrainians are presented because they're under assault by this terrible Russia invasion and war on Ukraine. They're presented as human beings. But people at the other end of U.S. missiles,
yeah,
very rarely do our news media portray them as people at all.
Does this, your topic in your book, it seems like something that happens regardless of if there are Republicans in charge, if there are Democrats in charge. Is there a difference between the two when a Republican is in office versus when a Democrat is in office? Or is it just kind of, no matter who you get, this seems to be the way we go?
In terms of foreign policy, and especially in terms of war, it's very much a bipartisan problem. And I think it's quite a notable split right now. Because if you look at Democrats and Republicans in Congress on a whole range of domestic issues, healthcare, education, housing, voting rights, civil rights, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, a huge difference. Right. I mean, let's be candid. The Republican Party is run by a bunch of neo-fascists. They are repressive. They're vicious. They hate poor people. They hate people who aren't on the dole from the Pentagon or some corporate outfit. I mean, I think that's fair to say. And so this recent round of cuts that Republicans insisted on with the debt ceiling negotiations, they're literally taking food out of the mouths of children. That's what they think is policy. So in domestic affairs, a huge difference between the two parties. Once you get to military spending and war, tiny difference, yeah, almost the same.
It's almost the same, like almost with issues of policing, right? It's always, I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and no matter who, you know, our mayors are constantly Democratic, but they're also always giving the police more and more money instead of, you know, I think crime prevention starts with kids, right? Like if you give a kid access to, you know, food, healthcare, and a good education, that child then grows up less likely to commit a quote unquote crime. And then your crime prevention starts there. But crime prevention for both parties, no matter what it is, it's always more police, you know, more war machines with police, more, you know, tanks and, you know, big weapons and all these things, instead of actually trying to fix the problem, which is always, if you meet people's needs, crime's going to go down.
We're seeing enormous militarization of police forces. There's a Pentagon program I write about in the book called the 1033 program. And the Pentagon is unloading all of this military equipment, MRAPs and tanks and so forth. They use them in Iraq. They use them in Afghanistan. They recycle them. They send them to police forces around the country. Jesse Jackson, when he ran for president, and I went actually to Atlanta in 1988 to the Democratic National Convention when Jackson was a candidate. And he said, and it's so true, then and now, you can put in some money on the front side or you can put in a lot of money on the back side. Mm-hmm. You can help people with healthcare and education now and give housing support, or you can wait later on and deal with the desperation and the justified anger that people have, lock people up, not provide the kind of services that human beings deserve, including the human right of healthcare. The military is a great example of how extreme that disparity is. I'm tempted to say it's really stupid, and it is, but it's also very lucrative. It's very, very profitable. And so when you've got so many lobbyists on Capitol Hill, you got huge contributions going into senators and members of the House from these contractors. Hey, they're walking the talk and talking the walk of those who are funding them. It's up to us to become more aware. We change history if we organize. If we don't, it's just handed down to us. And the warfare state is a pretty awful circumstance to be handed down to. It is really damaging the future of the next generations.
Agreed. Of the wars that we've been in your lifetime, my lifetime, I was born in 78. How many would you say were necessary for us to be involved in?
It's a great question. The first war that I was involved in the sense of alive at the time, was the Vietnam War,
right,
completely based on lies. And in the writing I've done and the research I've really engaged in, I got to say, every single U.S. war from the war in Vietnam to the present has been appreciably based on lies. Not entirely lies, but to such an extent that we haven't had the informed consent of the governed. We've had the uninformed consent.
And when people hear you say that, I know there's one segment of the population that's going to say you're anti-military, anti-soldier, blah, blah, blah. I find that stance more pro-military than anti, because you have kids sign up and it's like, we don't want to put you in harm's way unless we absolutely have to. And that's not what we do here in the United States of America, is it?
Yeah, it's like, hey, we're really going to help you out. You go out and fight. You go out and be maimed and killed because we really like you. So we're behind you. And that's really, that wears thin. And people begin to see through that. And when they see through it, sometimes it's too late.
Yeah, I struggle with that a lot. Whenever I have a relative that's thinking about going into the military or something like that, I'm like, I think that's a noble thing to do. But I also think that we have people that are going to send you and put you in harm's way for their own enrichment. And for no other reason.
Based on deception. And that's a pretty clear record. And I lay that out in the book. It's another aspect of the invisibility of war, that it has so routinely been based on lies that are sold to the public as truth. And unless we can get a real fix on and a real understanding of what the hell's going on, we're just going to be led like sheep to keep quiet while these wars continue.
And we see, I know one thing, I'm a big NFL fan, a football fan. And I know that the military has funded the NFL for years with, you know, the salutes and the big American flags that cover the entire field and the national anthem and all of these things. And that's just one segment of kind of the military propaganda that the United States puts on us. How widespread is this thing beyond?
It's so widespread that we don't even notice it after a while. It's like, you know, the Top Gun kind of movies, often subsidized one way or another by the Pentagon, you know, loan you an aircraft carrier to make a movie. Well, that's worth a hell of a lot of money. You can't really do a movie about aircraft carriers without the cooperation of the Pentagon. They get script approval. They can say we won't cooperate whatsoever if we don't like the script. That kind of thing has gone on time after time. And it's, you know, I see it as like a 360 thing. Often we're surrounded in news media and entertainment with saying, hey, wars are really great. That's what patriotism is about. Patriotism, we're told, is about waving the flag and saying, you know, let's you and them go out fight. Waving the flag is fine if it's about helping people. When it's about supporting lies and undermining democracy, that's a whole other thing. Mm-hmm. And you can't have democracy if you don't have the informed consent of the governed. What we're getting is we're getting scammed, quite frankly. We're getting uninformed consent of the governed, which really isn't consent at all.
My last question before I let you out of here. I know you're obviously, you've been doing, this is your life's work. You've been doing this your entire life. But I know also when doing research for books, you're going to run across something that you didn't even know to begin with, right? What was the thing that you learned while writing this book, while doing the research, that kind of stuck out or shocked you the most in the process?
Something that stunned me that I didn't really realize until several months into research for the book is that if you look at the so-called war on terror that began right after 9/11 and you grasp the reality of what percentage of the people who've been killed at the other end of U.S. firepower were people of color? The answer is 100%. So what does that tell us? You know, W.B. Du Bois wrote about the global color line. And this is a unspoken, hidden in plain sight reality, which is not talked about. I mean, for good reasons in the last few years, especially after the killing of George Floyd, which is emblematic of what goes on in cities and towns across this country with police forces. There's been a lot of talk about systemic racism. There should be talk about it. There needs to be a lot more. But how much talk do we have about systemic racism in U.S. foreign policy and conducting wars? The answer is virtually none at all. And so that again goes to the issue of invisibility. Another reason I called the book War Made Invisible, I think we got to get real about this or it will just continue and it will undermine our humanity.
Completely agree. I could talk to you all day about this, but I know you got to jump. Norman Solomon, the book is War Made Invisible. Thank you so much for taking time to do this.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.